Absolutely.
Please help me welcome Landra Hudson.
Thank you very much. There's never enough money for any of us that do court, am I right? All righty, we'll go ahead and get started. I'll tell y'all first, right out of the gate, I'm going to throw myself under the bus a little bit. Today I'm going to tell some stories about things that have happened in courts that I've worked in. I know that it happens everywhere, but I'm probably one of the only clerks that goes around and talks about it. I'm not bragging about it. It's just that I know that we've had issues, and I know that some of you may have had issues, and this is a perfect opportunity to kind of raise your hand. We can talk about some of those issues. We're going to talk about clerks' procedures and clerks' roles in the warrant process, how we can keep good warrants filed and active, and those that we may have a question about, how to get rid of those and how to fix those problems. Like I said, I'm going to share these stories, not because I'm proud of them, but I know I'm not alone. I may be the only one that talks about it, but I know that I'm not alone. How many of you have been a court clerk for longer than 5 years? So when y'all went to 32-hour, was Margaret still teaching everything? Well, I'll tell you a story a little bit later, but when I was at 32-hour, Margaret got up and was talking about warrants, and I, for the first time in Margaret's career, she was speechless because I asked one question. Raised my hand. I was brand new. I'd been doing it for about 6 months. And I asked her a question, and she looked at me, and she thought about it, and she looked back at me, and then she didn't even want to answer my question in front of everybody, and she said, "We'll talk about it after class." So I think I'm probably the reason she thought about retiring. I'm not sure, but I hope not. Today we're going to go back to the basics. This is a lot of basic 32-hour stuff. So some of you, I hope, will sit back and say, that's exactly what we do, and that's exactly the way that we've always done it. Others will look at me like I would have 5 years ago and kind of think, well, we don't do that. I've never heard of that. So we're going to kind of start back at the basics. I'd like to ask you to do me a favor, and I know as a guest of some of these conferences, I hate doing it. Please fill out your survey form for this class. I had to kind of twist some arms to get us a basic class, kind of the back to the basics, because there were so many clerks that were calling and asking questions. And there was so much comment about it in our chapters and our local groups, but nobody would really talk about it to TMCEC. So if you like the class, please let us know. If you think this class is way beneath you, please let me know that as well. It'll help us as we're doing curriculum for next year. So good or bad, I can take it. Again, you know, the money thing doesn't happen with this either, so it's okay. Hopefully, by the end of this session, you'll be able to take information back to your court and create some sort of a checklist, some sort of a, this is from beginning to end, this is what you do with warrants. I'm not going to tell you how to do your procedures. I'll share some of the things that I do in my court and some of the things that have worked and some of the things that have not worked. So that's our goal today. So how many of you in this room process warrants from the beginning to the end? How many people, just one person in your court, does it? And so how many people switch off with different clerks, do it at different times, or they do part of the process? Okay. And how many of you in here have full-time judges? You do? Do y'all have court every day? No. How many of you have judges that absolutely look at every single warrant, every single capious profine case, from start to finish, can I come work with you? Really, I want a judge. I want to work for a judge that does that, that checks everything. It does delay the process, but it kind of takes the heat off of the clerks a little bit. So, yeah, if you're taking applications, I'll give you my card and you let me know, because I want, in my career, I want to work for a judge that says, well, show me the case, because I'd like to see that. And if I start talking too fast, it's just because that's how fast I talk. Slow me down a little bit. I'm from West Texas, and everybody talks like this. So I decided when I was young I was going to be a speed talker. Get over that. Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about is the clerk's role. And we all know that we process things, and we call it different things. We know we're the ones printing those warrants. We know we're the ones checking over those cases to make sure that that's what's supposed to happen. But we're going to kind of go back to the basics and remind ourselves exactly what our job is. So number one, we prepare all the documents. We pretty much review all of the cases. We know who didn't show, who didn't pay, who didn't complete everything they were supposed to complete. The second part of our role is checking for accuracy. We got to make sure that we've got complaints. We've got to make sure all of those things are in order. So that also falls on us. And then we process warrants for signature, and we all love the process. I think that's another Margaret thing. So when Kathy came in, she would say, "You guys don't process warrants. Y'all are the one doing them. Y'all are issuing them." It's like, no, ma'am, we process. If you ever knew Margaret, you know we only process. So here's the only question, the only test you'll have today. In 2008, how many Class C warrants were issued in municipal courts? What's your guess? Somebody holler it out. 2.6 million. In 2009, we were at 2.8 million. And 2010, we are on track as municipal courts. And remember, this is just municipal courts. This is not justice courts. So whenever I was fighting for this class, that was my thing is, well, there's 2.6 million reasons that we should talk about this. So one of the things I'd like to talk about is, give me something that you think can happen if somebody's falsely arrested. Anybody? Sure. Sure, the clerk, you know. If you're responsible, it could come back on your judge. Liability for your city. You know, you always hear about false arrest, and that's what all makes our skin crawl. We just freak out anytime somebody says, "I've paid," and the first thing you want to do is grab that case and check it out. Something else that we need to think about is important evidence could be suppressed. And I'll tell you one of my experiences. Back in 2006, October 16th of 2009, there was a murder in our city. I live in the city of Seguin, and we have got a little bit of a drug problem and a little bit of a growing gang problem. And these two gangs decide that they're going to go out in the street and fight it out, and they used guns. And unfortunately, we lost someone. You know, a young man, he had been in some trouble, but it was a very unfortunate situation. So immediately, our police department is very proactive, and they're doing their best to keep this from happening and taking over our town. So they worked very closely with the district attorney's office, and they came in and said, well, there's this new law that says we can seize their property. If we can prove organized criminal activity, we can take their house, we can take their cars, we're going to get these people out of our town. We don't want to deal with it anymore, we're tired of it. So what happened is they started looking up everybody that they knew that was involved. They knew people were in the street, nobody would talk about it. They were rounding people up, they'd knock on the door, people wouldn't talk to them. You know, nobody's going to talk about it because they don't want to be the next person that gets their house shot up. So they came to me and they said, we have a plan and we'd like for you to work with us. Out of the 18 people that were arrested, 16 of them, including the young man that lost his life, had Class C warrants out of our court. So what they did is they came in, they asked me to check our warrants, we checked them over with a fine-tooth comb, make certain everything was okay. We sent them to our judge, make him check them, just double-checking, because they went in and they used these warrants as the probable cause to make contact with these guys. And once they were in jail, I had one guy that had $12,000 worth of warrants. He was fixing to spend a couple of months in jail. He started talking, and he started telling them, this is who's here, this is who's here. You know, this person was there. He was standing beside the truck. They solved that case on making contact with our Class C warrants. So everybody's like, well, it's just a traffic ticket. It's just a misdemeanor court. You're absolutely right. But had one of those warrants not been good, and one of those guys got a top-notch defense attorney and came in, they could have lost every bit of that information. Then they wouldn't have been able to use it. Out of the 18 people that were involved, all 18 went to jail for long terms. The guy that actually ended up doing the shooting was just sentenced about 2 weeks ago to 40 years. So it happens, and they use these warrants, you know, as to help them out. So it is important, and that evidence could be suppressed if for some reason that warrant wasn't valid. So we're going to talk about warrants of arrest first. We all know that this is when a defendant fails to appear. There's a new law about sworn complaints for violate promise to appear and failure to appear that went into effect last legislative session, September 1, 2009. It says that there's a mandatory filing of complaints upon non-appearance. Most of you are probably already doing that. Is everybody doing the complaints on FTAs and violate promise to appears? Before that, I think pretty much everybody was. They just kind of, you know, shorted up and said, okay, now you have to do it. So that's the new law concerning that. The court that I worked in before I came to the city of Seguin, the question that goes back to Margaret retiring, was I worked for a kind of a mid-sized city, and I thought that I was just on a roll. I came from the oil field in West Texas, and I had been doing court for about 6 months. And the court administrator, the prosecutor, and the judge all quit. Everybody got mad and quit. And so it was a smaller city, and my city manager comes to me, and he says, well, you've been doing this for 6 months. You know how to do it, right? Well, sure. I didn't want to tell him no because I didn't want to lose my job, right? So the next day he comes in and he said, well, he said, I talked to the mayor and he said, we've made the decision that we're going to give you the court administrator job. And I'm like, I haven't even been to 32 hour yet. And he said, well, what is that? And I'm like, well, you have to go to 32 hour, you know. So I start trying to tell him what it is. As most city managers, I work directly for him, but as most city managers, he really didn't have a clue about the certification process or what we do, or, you know, we just kind of stand at the window all day. But so sure enough, they gave me the job, gave me the $2 an hour raise. I was all excited, and then I go to 32 hour. And boy, I knew how our court worked, but that book that's like this big at 32 hour was overwhelming. And the story I was going to tell you about Margaret is she's talking about warrants and she's talking about what's required, and she gets to the part where complaints are required on all of your warrants. And then she mentions that you also have to have a formal complaint whenever somebody pleads not guilty. And she goes on and on, and Margaret's kind of like I am. She talks a lot. She doesn't give everybody an opportunity to raise their hand, so I did. I sat there like this, and then I would do this. And finally, she, you know, I got her attention, and she said, yes, ma'am. And I said, well, what happens if you have all of your warrants and there's no complaints on any of them? And she said, how long have you been doing court? And I said, 6 months. And so then she says to me, and what is your position with that court? You know, and she's just looking at me. And so, you know me, I'm like, oh, proud. I raised my shoulders. I said, well, I'm the court administrator. I'd been the court administrator for 2 weeks, y'all, and that was what she remembered me by. So she looks at me, and she looks down, and she looks back up, and then she says to me, as soon as the session is over, we'll visit in the hall. Well, I didn't even know I was in trouble, but I was in trouble. And so out in the hall, she kind of calmed down, and she said, because she knew that, you know, I had been kind of pushed into that position, but boy, I felt stupid after I raised my hand and said, ooh, I'm the big-time court administrator over here. The end result of that conversation with Margaret was I had to make a telephone call to my city manager, which is getting ready to go into a council meeting, and let them know that we were now going to recall $2 million worth of warrants because they weren't valid. We didn't have a single complaint on an arrest warrant in the history of that court, not one. And remember, you only have 2 years to file that complaint. So I thought, well, we'll just go back and we'll do the last 2 years. Problem is, I didn't have about half of the officers. It was impossible to go through and figure them out. Our KPS profines were okay. They all had what they were required to have. They all had judgments. We were good with that. But no complaints. And so try to walk into a council meeting and explain, because council members think that that money is in the bank. It's just waiting to be transferred. They don't think about you collecting it. But you walk in and let them know that you're going to lose the potential to collect that money, you know, because we made a mistake. So that is, we make sure we print complaints on every single case in my court now, just as a result of that. So we're going to talk about the clerk's role in the arrest warrant process. First of all, we're going to verify the sworn complaint. And it must be written, Article 45.019A1 of the Code of Criminal Procedure explains what must be in that complaint and how it must be written. The complaint must be sworn to and signed. Now, how many of you, do your officers come in and sign all the complaints? What is some of the processes that you guys use? They sign them. That's a good. How many tickets do you run a month?
Just along Monday, we had 312.
So that's a high volume. So you actually have officers sitting there signing those complaints. That's excellent. Excellent. Anyone else? Does anybody else have a way? What we do is we actually have our probable cause affidavit on the back of our citation, and the officer is required to sign that. And then whenever we get the citations in, our clerks enter them, and then they sign the complaint stating that they have knowledge, they have personal knowledge because of the charging instrument. So there's several ways to do it. I know with these electronic ticket writers, it's been very interesting to see in our area, everybody's going electronic, and it's been very interesting to see the different ways that officers are having to do it. Some of them are printing them out, and the officers have to come over and have an appointment, you know, once a week. But I don't know what they're doing with the night guys. I guess they meet them up there at midnight or something. I don't know. I wouldn't do it, so. Then we're going to verify the probable cause affidavit, and the probable cause affidavit is our sworn statement that presents evidence necessary to cause a person to believe someone has committed a crime. How many of your complaints have the probable cause included in it? Does anybody do separate probable cause affidavits? You do separate? We used to have separate, and it's just one more piece of paper, so we combined all of ours. It's very nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, and y'all kind of took almost a step back. Excuse me. And either way is fine. It just depends on what the flow of your court is and how, you know, how that works. And then that goes back to a complaint by itself is not probable cause unless it contains additional information regarding the probable cause. So that's the reason back in our area most everybody has combined them, because I know some of my complaints had probable cause on it and then I'd read it and some of them didn't. And so we went through and made sure that all of ours were all together. Then finally, we're going to prepare the warrant for the judge's signature, and we're going to include or attach the sworn complaint and the probable cause affidavit. I can tell you that that's the way that it's supposed to be. I know in my court, I hand my judge a stack of warrants and he signs them. He doesn't review the cases. I used to put the cases on his desk, and then, you know, the fan would come on or something and they'd get blown all over the place and they were always out of order. So if he looked at them, I would give them to him, but most of the time, he doesn't look at them. And then finally, we're going to coordinate the service of our warrant with the police department, warrant officer, or marshal. How many of you guys have full-time warrant officers in your courts? Excellent. How many of you have marshal services? How is that? Do you love it? You have a marshal service as well? We have all been looking at it in our area. I think it's a good deal. Then we're going to enter the defendant into the FTA OmniBase system for DPS if we're contracted, everybody using Omni. And after the 60 days, if we're contracted, we're going to report to our third-party collection agency. And we'll talk a little bit more about some Omni issues here in a few minutes. Does anybody have any questions at this point or any stories they want to tell me about? Nobody has any horror stories like I did with the no complaints? Okay, we're going to move on to KPS Profines. So now that you know what happened to me in the city that I was in before, I'll tell you that when I took the job in Seguin, I was very excited. And I knew better than to open my mouth about anything, about what my title was or anything, until I found out what shape we were in. So I walked into the city of Seguin, and the very first day, and I'm not joking, the very first thing I did was go to the warrant files. And I took one of the lead clerks with me, and I said, "Show me your warrants and show me what you guys do." And so she said, "Oh, okay, well, the warrants are all filed at the police department, and we keep all of the complaints here. And then we match them up. If somebody's arrested," I'm like, "Great. So we have complaints?" And she said, "Oh, yes, ma'am, we have complaints on every single case." I am in heaven, y'all, I have to tell you. I'm so excited, and so I go through the day. And at the end of the day, I started looking. I had some cases come across that were from the previous administrator that needed to be taken care of, and I noticed that they were KPS Profine warrants, you know, complaints that were associated with KPS Profine warrants. And the very first one that I picked up had a sticky note on it that said, "Pay $25 on November 1st. Not November 1st, 2001, 2002, on November 1st. But it had a warrant attached to it. So I'm like, "Okay, let me go find the order." Guess what was in there? The complaint that we are so proud that we have on every case, the ticket, so we had the charging instrument, and we had a sticky note. That was the judge's order on a sticky note. So I walk in, and I said, "Well, maybe this is the reason this one's on my desk, because I can't imagine that we don't have orders for payment plans and defensive driving and deferred and all of those neat things." And I said, "Can you tell me where the judgment is for this?" And she said, "Oh, yes, ma'am, it's that yellow." And I said, "No, it's not." "Really, where's the judgment?" "No, that's what they did." And so that was on a Monday. The next day, I had my very first court session with the sticky note judge, and that's what I called him. And so we walk in, and I have all of my papers, all my forms that I used to take in my other court. And, you know, we walk in, and I sit down with him, and he reaches over and hands me, and we're not even talking about a 3x3 sticky note. We're talking about one of those little bitty ones. And he reaches over, and he hands me my stack of the sticky notes, and he keeps his stack, and we start court. And it was the craziest thing I had ever seen. I know I sat there the whole time with my mouth just open. because every single thing that he did, if he wanted defensive driving, he would write DDC, sticky note, and tell him, come back Friday. If it was a payment plan, it was payments on the 1st. Didn't tell me when to start, didn't tell me how long he had to pay, didn't have a signature. Literally, that was, our judgments were sticky notes. So, obviously that's not going to work. So, although then I had these beautiful printed out complaints, I had no judgments. And I found out that because we have some software challenges, when the girls got busy years ago, whenever they started getting more and more cases, they just stopped doing them. They just decided that they didn't need orders from, you know, anything. They didn't need a judgment. They didn't need defensive driving instructions. They just didn't have anything. Everything was a sticky note. So we changed that. I've spent 2 years, and sticky notes are banned in my office. You cannot even have a sticky note with a telephone number on your bulletin board. It's gone. And so we laugh about that, but that really is how serious it was. So guess what? In Seguin, we had to go recall all of our KPS Pro fines. We didn't have a judgment. We, you know, again, city council wasn't happy. Yes, ma'am. Sticky notes? He's using the personal knowledge, which is what my clerks obviously aren't out on traffic stops. But they have personal knowledge because the officer handed him this ticket. The officer swore to that probable cause affidavit that's on that ticket and said, this is what happened. And so the clerks are signing off. So your judge is right. I have had police officers. I had one situation to where one of the supervisors wanted to sign off on all of his guy's stuff just because he knew he was going to be there and he wasn't real sure if they were going to be there kind of thing. But, yeah, I mean, that does happen in some police departments. They do have other officers sign it. You can sign the complaints, and the biggest thing is, like I said, is you've already got the probable cause. You said you shook your head a while ago that it's on your ticket. So basically all you're using that is you've got personal knowledge because you have the charging instrument. And so that's the way we do it. And we do require 2 clerk signatures on ours.
Well, and there are citations, or we have the ticket writers, but mm-hmm. all they do is just sign for it. That wouldn't be,
That's not the same thing, because what you're talking about the defendant signs for it. Sure.
But later on that we work on the complaint must be sworn to and signed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how is that? Or
her question is, she's talking about the probable cause affidavit and everything, and then she's saying that the complaint must be sworn to and signed, which is what we were talking about earlier. It's supposed to be a sworn complaint. So if I walk up to you and I say, Maribel, will you please, you know, I signed these. Will you please sign them? And then you make me swear to them. Raise your right hand and swear to them. It's sworn and signed. So, you know, swear to them. I will tell you that I know that I've been in courts, and my court's been guilty of it. Everybody has stamps. And, you know, reach over and let me stamp my name, and then let me grab your stamp and stamp your name. We've really tried to get away with that because I have actually been called into a trial where a defense attorney obviously has been around municipal court quite a bit. And when I got up on the stand, he said, Did you swear to this complaint? Did you witness this person? He asked me, and luckily I could say yes. But that was back whenever I was doing it all. So I always just make them, it takes 5 minutes, and you can do it on the whole stack. You don't have to do it one at a time. And so same thing with the officers. And I will tell you, sometimes if I know that we're going to have a really serious jury trial, or we've got some other stuff, you know, like all of this that was related to all the gangs and all that gang activity, and we get somebody in there for like a domestic violence issue or something like that, we'll go ahead and reprint the complaint. We'll have the officer come in and swear to the original complaint just in case a defense attorney tries to pick apart the clerk signing. Everybody at TMCC has told me that it's acceptable, and I know we're not the only court that does that. So, yes, ma'am, I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm just saying
that KPS Pro fines, well, you're issuing the warrant. KPS don't. We're talking about arrest warrants. So KPS Pro fines have to have judgments.
Right.
And that's what. But they can't be on a sticky note.
Yeah, got that.
How many times do y'all hear? That is the most embarrassing story, but now that it's been a few years, I can laugh about it. But I really did save some of the very best ones and have them up on my desk just to remind myself that, yeah, we save a lot of money on sticky notes. Okay, so we're going to talk about KPS Pro fines. KPS Pro fines are issued when a defendant fails to satisfy a judgment. So when would a KPS Pro fine be issued? Anybody? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Community service, absolutely. Community service is a big one in our court. People, they don't feel like they can pay, so they request community service, and then they don't do it, and then we have to start that process. But community service, the
tobacco awareness.
Mm-hmm. And remember that if there's still fines due, if they've paid all of their fines, a CAPIS Pro fine wouldn't be what we issued. We report that to DPS on the form, you know, on their DIC form. Right, right. So now we're going to talk about the clerk's role with the CAPIS Pro fines. So the clerk reviews the case file to ensure that it has a signed judgment. And whenever we're talking about the judgment, we just want to make sure that we've got the order of deferred, or we've got the defensive driving, or the payment plan. We just want to make sure that our judge has signed that and that everything is complete. The other thing that we need to do is we need to be checking receipts, deposits, however your court does it. I know different software does different things. Some people attach something as like a deposit slip. Some people attach receipts. Some people still do hand receipts. But we're just going to go through and we're going to make sure that what the balance of that is what the, you know, add the receipts up, make sure we didn't miss one, make sure one didn't get misplaced. And that's just going to ensure that our court records are accurate. Now, this is where everybody will start rolling their eyes. The court prepares a sworn affidavit that indicates the clerk has researched the case file and the court records show the defendant is in default. This is not required. Whenever I first started, I was taught that it was required. It's not required. It's kind of a recommended practice. If you do some sort of a checklist, then you wouldn't necessarily even want to do this. I will tell you that I've stopped doing the sworn affidavit in our court because I have a checklist, and I go through and I make sure that, you know, it's all on me. I'm the only one who does warrants because I'm scared of warrants now after the whole no complaint judgment on sticky notes thing. So I do the warrants, I check them all, and that way, if something happens, it's going to be me that does it. If I make a mistake, then that's fine, but I don't want my staff, until we get everything sorted out, to be responsible for that. So if you want to do the sworn affidavit, I don't believe that the affidavit is even in the new forms book. It was for a long time. So if you look in an older forms book and you want to rely on that, then that is one option. Otherwise, you know, I just suggest maybe you make some sort of a checklist, and so that you know when you're going through the case and the phone rings or somebody comes in and needs to talk to you or needs to pay, then you don't forget where you were and you don't have to go back over it, but that way you just kind of can pick up where you left off. So again, it's recommended, not required. I've gotten a lot of emails about that one. Then the clerk's going to prepare the CAPIS Pro fine for signature. We're going to include the judgment and the sworn affidavit. If that's your court policy, what I do is I attach my checklist to the back of it. Like I said, my judge does not review the case files. So when we pull something out, if there's a CAPIS Pro fine issued on it, that's the first place that we started when we were going through those warrants for our police department, is, you know, was it there? Was it checked? That kept me from having to check every single receipt again. I didn't have to, but I still did because I was still concerned. So then again, we're going to coordinate the service of the warrant with our police department, our warrant officer, or our marshal service, if that applies. And we're going to, get ahead of myself. We're going to enter the defendant into the Omnibase system for DPS. And if we're contracted with a third-party collection agency, we're going to report that to them after 60 days. How many of you do Omni and collection agency both? So let's talk about Omni and watch our heads all spin. So section 706.006, the payment of the administrative fee. And I'm going to read this to you because I know y'all all can read, but it'll help me remember what I'm saying. A person who fails to appear for a complaint or citation for an offense described by section 706.002A shall be required to pay an administrative fee of $30 for each complaint or citation reported to the department under this chapter, unless the person is acquitted of the charges for which the person failed to appear. And so typically in our courts, what do you think of as acquitted? I'm sorry?
Does that only apply to an FTA itself?
It does not.
Does that apply to the original citation?
Yes. Yes. Both. What does an acquittal mean to you? Just off the top of your head, when you think you hear it on the news, somebody was acquitted of a charge, what does that mean? Well, does it not guilty imply that they went to trial? So we'll get into that in a second, but think about that, and you'll think about the reason that I called Omni and said, okay, if this happens, tell me what we're supposed to do. Because I worked for a city that used Omni before, but now I don't use Omni because I'm still working through my sticky note warrants, and I don't want to report someone and hold their driver's license until I know completely what we're dealing with. So now we're going to ask a couple of questions. This is not a test like the other one was. So if a defendant is required to pay Omni fees if the judge dismisses the underlying offense? Okay, no. But remember, dismissal, a prosecutor dismissal or a judge's dismissal, and whenever we're talking about it, we don't think about it as an acquittal because we, you know, we have to go to trial. So that was one of the questions that I asked Omni. Omni says dismissals equal not guilty. So used to, they would say, I know when I first started using Omni, if someone came in with no insurance and they had gone to warrant and they came in and provided proof, Omni would say, well, we did the work, we sent the letter, we still want the $30. We finally nailed them down this last year, and I called and I have it in writing. So whatever I tell y'all, they won't come back on me. The second one, a defendant is granted time served. Is the defendant required to pay Omni fees? That's why I said the heads will spin. Omni's going to tell you that they're going to leave it up to your judge. Omni says yes, absolutely. Omni says, you know, if they're in there and they sit it out, they still owe the $30 in order to get their driver's license. Now, we know that we can't make them sit out that extra $30 because it's an administrative fee. But what they told me at Omni when I called and asked is they said, we've decided to leave that up to your judges. So whatever your judge decides is fine. The biggest thing I would tell you is make sure we're doing it the same on all of them. So, yes, ma'am, did you have a question? There is what she said was that they use OmniBase, and sometimes her judge comes in and says, we're going to waive this Omni fee, that $30 Omni fee, because, you know, maybe I think the family's indigent or, you know, he can't afford, or for whatever reason your judge decides. You should not have to pay. It depends on how, and I don't want to tell you wrong because I haven't used the latest update with Omni. Whenever I had Omni in my prior court, you would go in, we would do it manually, where you go in and you have the option of not acquitted, time served. I'm trying to remember what the other options were. There were several options. I think deceased was one. But when you go up and do time served, they should not bill you for those because, like I said, they tell you that they leave it up to the judge. So you may contact your Omni rep and say the judge didn't collect it because if you don't collect it, you obviously shouldn't have to pay it. And so, yes, ma'am. And when you go in to report it, what she said is they have Omni, and when they do time served, Omni doesn't require them to pay. It does have time served. That's the way that I do it, too, or did it whenever I had it. Now, I know that the statement that they send sometimes can be a little bit confusing as far as, you know, they send you a thing and say, this is how many cases you processed. It was my understanding that when we got our statement, those were cases that either paid, you know, that we collected money on. So you may double check with your rep because you should not be having to pay those. And according to Omni, the judge has every right not to collect that fee on those. They're going to leave it up. They get the little statement. Well, if you're using Encode, and it's been a couple of years since I've used Encode, we're going back to Encode, but shouldn't, whenever you go in and do time served, Encode should probably be taken off of those Omni fees. Gotcha. Right. That's what we paid to. Yeah, whatever was in. And the neat thing about Omni is, and I had one when I taught the session in Lubbock, I had a clerk that was just, she was so upset because she said, well, I have all kinds of problems with Omni. She said, every month, you know, or every quarter, I get this bill, and I never have enough money in my account, in my Omni fees, to pay what they're saying that I owe them. And she just is, you know, she just can't figure it out. Come to find out, what she was doing is when somebody would come in and set up a payment plan, her judge said, pull their Omni hold. So when she pulled it out and she put it in ENCODE, it was showing that that hold had been pulled, or not in ENCODE, she had HTE, that hold had been pulled, and it was charging. She hadn't collected the money yet, but her city was having to pay it out, and she hadn't collected it. So we visited about the fact that you can never put a case in Omni twice. So until it's paid, the chances of you getting your money after you let that go are slim to none. That's exactly the way that you should be doing it. Sure. Because they come in and they say, let's make a deal. My client can pay $1,000, but he can't pay it until the 15th. But he has to have his driver's license, and he has to be able to go to work. And, yeah, we run into that a lot. The answer to that question is, and your judge, I realize that your judge has the ultimate decision because it is his court. But when the judge realizes that the city's going to pay that money whether you collect it or not, and chances are once you get your driver's license, once they get their license, you're not going to collect it because you can't put them back in. You've got no recourse at that point. You can send them to collection agency all day long, and if your collection agency is like mine, they'll just keep getting a letter and they'll keep getting returned. But you know, it's a good tool if we use it properly. Does anybody else have any more questions about Omni? If the judge declares the defendant indigent, is the defendant required to pay Omni fees? The answer is no. If the judge goes through an indigency hearing and he says this defendant does not have the money to pay and community service, all of those sorts of things are not an option, I'm just going to do away with his fines, they are not required to pay Omni. And when you report to Omni, that should be another, I believe the drop-down has an indigency choice. So now we'll get into see if I can tell a story. Johnny is cited for no insurance and fails to appear in court. An FTA is issued and the case ends up in warrants. The two cases are reported to Omni. When Johnny appears in court, the judge dismisses the no insurance with the proof and Johnny pleads guilty to the FTA. What Omni fees are due?
$30.
So, like I said, the whole acquittal dismissal thing, I always thought that we were doing it right, and then everybody else thought that they were doing it right, so I just called, and I got Scott on the phone, and I said, tell me once and for all, because I'm going to be going across Texas telling clerks. So, and I've had a lot of clerks send me an email that says, our judge disagrees. I was like, yes, ma'am, I know. My judge disagrees, too. So it's okay. It won't be the first time. So let's say that Johnny is cited for speeding and fails to appear in court. A violate promise to appear is issued, and the case ends up in warrants. The two cases are reported to Omni. Johnny enters a not guilty plea and requests a jury trial. At trial, the jury finds Johnny not guilty of the speeding charge. What Omni fees are due? It depends on the disposition of the violate promise to appear.
Oh, he just got found innocent of the speeding, not the DTPA. So the DTPA is still found, right?
So, but then at that point, you would still ask your judge, because the violate promise to appear, some judges do it different. I know in our court, we stopped issuing failure to appear and violate promise to appear about 2 years ago. It's heaven. It's a nightmare. Issuing the different, with our software, we have some software challenges. We're getting over them because we're going to ENCODE, and I'm very excited. But there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, it was time-consuming. Number two, the reason that the people weren't appearing in our court was because they couldn't afford to pay. They couldn't afford to pay the speeding charge or, you know, the stop sign or their animals running at large. And so we went from issuing a failure to appear or a violate promise to appear on every single case. And if you had five cases, then you got five failure to appears. And that's the way that they were doing it. The court that I came from previously, we would issue one failure to appear. And it kind of gave our prosecutor something to play with a little bit. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll get rid of this one, but I'm not going to get rid of the FTA. So there's several courts in Texas that have stopped doing it, and we were one of them. And I will tell you, I would not want to go back and do them again. Violate promise to appears and failure to appears. When I issue a warrant, when I process a warrant, let me clear myself. When I process a warrant, we process it on the underlying charge, on the speeding charge, or on the failure to appear. We don't file, you know, the warrant. The violate promise to appear is not what triggers the warrant. And so we did away with them. I can tell you that it's been our experience. There were mixed feelings in our city. everybody was looking at it again. Council looks at this big bank that we have over here that we can just draw from anytime. You know, they don't have the money. Those funds aren't there. So when we told them what we wanted to do, reluctantly they let us do it. And guess what's happened? We do not have very many people that fail to appear for court, because they know they can come in. We're going to work with them. We've set up some payment plans. We've done some different things, and we've started working with them instead of just slapping warrants on them. When I got to Seguin, there were over 15 people that owed $20,000 plus in warrants. We didn't have a place to take them. We didn't have a jail. We didn't have an agreement with the county. So they would pull me over and give me 5 tickets, and I wouldn't appear in court, and no big deal. A week later, they'd get me again, and I wouldn't appear in court. And it added up, and it stacked up. And our defendants were overwhelmed. Our citizens were overwhelmed. So we kind of did we just revamped the whole thing and said, we know that traffic violations are going to occur, and when they do, you come in, take care of it, and we'll help you out with it. But it's actually increased our profits by not doing the failure to appears and the violate promise to appears.
Do you have to have some type of hearing or anything like that before?
For the failure to appear? No.
No.
Now, her question was, do you have to have some sort of a hearing before the failure to appear? Now, do you mean if you're going to issue a failure to appear or a violate promise to appear, do you have to have some... They have to have failed to appear for their initial appearance, and then a clerk is required. You know, you have to sign stating the complaint stating that they did not appear. So we're going to talk about collection agency fees. The collection agency fee does not apply to a case that has been dismissed by a court of competent jurisdiction or to any amount that has been satisfied through time served or community service. So time served and the community service is kind of the same thing as Omni. You can kind of use that same rule. You cannot require that they pay the collection agency the 30% or the 20%, depending on what the date was. The other thing that you need to remember is you don't have to pay your collection agency that money. A lot of software programs everybody's been having problems with, it's reporting that it's been, you know, it's resolved and the case is closed, and then cities are getting billed for it. So that's something to watch out with your collection agencies. You know, check and make sure that those collection those fees have been pulled and that you're not having to pay them. Yes, ma'am? Mm-hmm. Sure, but the thing about that you need to remember about community service, what she said is they email their collection agency to find out if they've had contact with that person. If the collection agency has attempted to contact them or made contact with them, then they pay the collection fee. If not, they don't. Remember, we're talking about time served and community service. So you can't let someone sit out monies that are due for collection agency fees, because it's just like Omni, it's an administrative fee. So, you know, like I have some cases that have well over $100 of collection agency fees. Just remember that they can't sit that out. We can't require that they sit that out. Any questions? So we'll run through real quick so we have 5 more minutes. Is a defendant required to pay collection fees if the judge dismisses the underlying offense? I will tell you also that you want to check with your collection agencies and make sure that how you're reporting it in your software is the way that when they're getting it, they're showing that. I had a problem with mine because it was my software, the way we were entering it, it was charging us for each of those. Even though we weren't receiving any money, somehow it was reporting on the backside and the collection agency would send me a bill for it. So little things like that, you'll catch quite a few mistakes and it adds up. It saves you quite a bit of money. A defendant is committed to jail. Are collection fees included in the warrant amount? Okay, so once you issue an arrest warrant or a KPS profile warrant and you don't have any contact with that defendant, it goes to warrants, everything is good to go, and then your 60 days comes up and you add your collection fee, what do y'all do with that collection fee? Are you reprinting your warrants? Your collection fee is just, it's just showing in the system, but it's not showing on your warrant. That's the way it's supposed to be. I know whenever I was in Lubbock, I had several clerks that actually went back in, and they would reprint the warrant once the collection agency fees were added because, you know, it's like, well, they owe us more money. Remember that when someone is arrested, the amount has to be, you know, the face amount has to be on the face of the warrant. The amount due has to be on the face of the warrant, and we can't include collection fees on that. When we're collecting money, yes, we can. But when they're arrested, if they're going to have to sit it out, the judge, the magistrate, whoever is taking care of that, needs to know what the warrant amount is without Omni, without any sort of administrative fees. So you might want to make sure.
The amount wouldn't be on
the amount would not be included. And I had a problem with that in my court because if someone was had an arrest warrant and the collection fees has already been added, and then they came back in and they made a deal with the judge and they said, well, I'm going to make payments, and they default on their payments, then when I issue the warrant, the collection fees are going to be included in that. You see what I mean? The collection fees were already there. Now it's going to be included in the total amount. So we went in and we have to take them out. We manually take them out if it goes into capias profine. And then finally, if the judge declares the defendant indigent, is the defendant required to pay collection fees? No. The last thing that we're going to talk about are the resources. I know that probably all of y'all, that the 32-hour book probably sits very close to your desk. I've worn the binder out on mine. You know, things that you don't see every day, things that you don't do every day, that's an excellent resource. All of the 12 hours that you go to, you know, hold on to those. The forms book is something that we go back to over and over and over again. The other thing is everybody around here, y'all have local chapters? TCCA chapters? Yeah. We rely on our chapters a lot. I mean, we get our education from them. We call each other. We probably, in our group, we're kind of small. We're in the Freedom Trail chapter, and we probably talk at least once a week. Everybody has something. And court clerks in your area, court clerks across the state, I've never picked up the phone and called another court clerk and asked a question that I didn't get an answer, you know, or they said they couldn't help me. We're very willing to help each other. So just remember, if you get overwhelmed or you run into something, call other municipal courts and see what they're doing. I know I've done some observation around our area, and I have taken some cool stuff out of there, take it back and, you know, act like it's my idea. It's great. But it's a good resource just to call them and say, how do you do this? I was talking to a lady this morning, well, Pat, the lady that taught the domestic violence, and I said, how do y'all run 600 people through your court in 3 hours? I mean, really and truly, how do you do it? I want to know because I can't run 600 through my court in 3 hours. So it's the best, one of the best resources we have. And then another thing, if you can get your hands on a TCCA procedures and reference guide, has anybody seen one? They used to have them, and I guess they're not going to make any more. But if you can get your hands on one, grab it and hold on to it for dear life. It'll give you step-by-step for everything that we run into. I think that it's just so expensive to make those books and to do it, and with the law changes every couple of years, it's difficult to keep up, but it is an excellent reference. It is the Texas Court Clerks Association, and it's called the Procedures and Reference Guide. They had one for judges, too, and I bought one for my judge, and he uses it all the time. It's neat. And, of course, I know that I've shared some stories of my misfortunes in court, and I've found in a couple of the other courts that it's not fun to talk about, and people don't like to talk about it. So after the fact, I've received several emails from clerks saying, I really didn't want to say in front of everybody and have you look at me like Margaret looked at you. I didn't want to raise my hand. If you have any questions or if there's anything I can do, if I don't have the answer, I promise I will find somebody that does. And you can email me. My name is in the front, and or give me a call. Thank you for your time.